love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
Damn, Jesus, get booted. Yeah.
Alex.
Kid, you tried your best, and you failed miserably. The lesson is, never try.
And Dave.
I was younger 23 minutes ago. Cut me some slack.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to Comic Conversation, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. And if you're listening on iTunes, please leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate that. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dave and Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm all right.
All right. And Dave.
I'm better than I was 23 minutes ago.
That was so long ago. I was younger back then. Cut me some slack. Going to our first segment, news. Holy crap, I forgot we still did the segment.
We haven't had news in a while.
Yeah, I know. Well, we can't go in there and make news. And boy, do we ever have some news. We have a gigantic news. Our first leading news story that we absolutely had to talk about. Now, of course, I'm referring to the elite copy of DC Rebirth 1 actually made its way to the internet. So we have
spoilers.
Some gigantic spoilers. But you know what? We're doing this on Saturday, and this show comes out on Wednesday. So the fact of the matter is...
But it's not cool to spoil stuff day of.
I guess. Still. Okay, so you have your warning. This is spoiler warning for whatever reason why. You're a grown adult. If you still care about spoilers in 2016, shame on you. But
skip past news.
Yeah, well, it'll probably be a very 5 to 10 minute segment, depending how.
This issue supposed to come out?
Next today.
Next week.
Today.
Really?
No. What? Today?
Yeah.
Well, today when the show comes out.
You fool.
No, it. Comics don't come out on Saturday.
They come out.
No,
Wednesday,
he means like the show will be posted on Wednesday. By then, it won't be a spoiler.
I know. I have to explain. Oh,
right.
I explained Alex how the power of podcasting works.
Well, whatever. What they did was because they really want to push this because this is the start of DC's newest sort of relaunch. They sent out review copies and they put NDAs on all the people who got the review copies. This didn't stop reputable sites from reviewing the comic. they were just really vague about it.
State of comic journalism, by the way.
And it also didn't stop, I think it was Bleeding Cool, from getting a review copy from one of the other sites and then saying, well, we got the copy from someone else and we won't say who, but since we didn't sign an NDA, we're going to talk about it. And they gave spoilers. And do you have a list of those spoilers?
Yeah. Yes, very quickly. Let me go with my reaction to these spoilers.
Oh my God, no!
I only felt that way about one of them.
Really? There was a bunch of them. Let's go, the first one being which Wally West is back.
Needed to happen for some time.
Okay, I'm sure you're cool with that one, but the second one we have is... No, okay, if you want to talk at length about it, by all means.
He's the best Flash. He was my favorite Flash. He was Mark Waid's Flash. Bringing Hal Jordan back and bringing Barry Allen back were two huge fucking mistakes. Now, I will grant you that Geoff Johns did make Green Lantern an A character when he did Green Lantern Rebirth, mm-hmm. and that was all based around Hal Jordan. But if Geoff Johns decided to do big fucking company-wide crossovers with Kyle Rayner, it would have worked just as well. The love of Hal was not so strong. And also, what audience were you drawing in with that? 40-year-olds? 50-year-olds? Is that really what you want? Like, I'm 32. I was probably 25 when this happened. Mm-hmm. I'm a much better market to draw from. And Kyle Rayner was my Green Lantern when I was growing up. So, that was kind of a fucked thing. Making Wally West go away, he was really important in Flashpoint. Mm-hmm. They never really explained what happened to him. They just never brought him back. But now, with Rebirth, since everything old is new again, they brought Wally West back. He's not, from the leaked art I saw, he appears to be Kid Flash, or he'll have a different name.
Yeah, from the leak images at bleedingcool.com, we did in fact have him in the Kid Flash costume.
Yeah, they might not call him that, but it's Wally West, so that's good. What's the next one?
All right. This is the funniest one in them all, and the one that you probably, oh my God, no one. There are three Jokers, which makes no sense to me reading this.
What?
That's not the one I was upset about. There were already two Jokers. There's Joker, Joker's daughter. There was that guy who was wearing Joker's face.
You mean Joker?
I thought that was the
Joker's daughter wore the face, as far as I know, and Joker wore the face.
I thought it was that doll maker guy.
Could have been. That was before my time, so it may have been.
That was right at the relaunch. Well, whatever. Yeah, there's three Jokers. What else? That one's not a big deal.
The original JSA is back, which I don't even know what that means. You're a DC expert.
The Justice Society of America, which is the comic Jeff Johns got his start at DC in. He had a very good run on that. The Justice Society of America was originally the Earth 2 version of the Justice League. It had the older versions of the characters on a team. And then when Jeff Johns wrote it in the mid-90s for some time, it was a mixture of older characters and younger like legacy characters who had taken on the roles of the old characters. It's a very good run. As far as I know, they haven't really existed, though. I thought maybe they did on that Earth 2 book, but I didn't read it, so I didn't know. So bringing the Justice Society back, that's fine.
Okay, and our last one, the one that probably sent you off into tizzy, is the Watchmen are part of the DCU.
That's a huge fucking mistake. And the Watchmen are now characters.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, they're not called the Watchmen. They're called the Minutemen, but the movie ruined that. Yeah, the Watchmen characters are now a part of that. And apparently Dr. Manhattan figures heavily into the new DC continuity.
Yeah, they're responsible for the loss of time, and apparently the person who'd made the new 52 was, in fact, Dr. Manhattan.
Which is a big change from, you know, it being Flashpoint, but, you know, he did have God powers, so, but that's fucking...
Yeah, I know. The panel I'm looking at right now is Batman, and he's holding the comedian's button, the one with the blood on it.
Which is cute, but I was so angry when I read that. The Watchmen comic was created as like a deconstruction of the superhero comics. Mm-hmm. They were fill-in characters. They were characters DC already has. You know, Doc Manhattan was Captain Atom. Rorschach was the Question.
Yeah, that's why I was having fun with my friend Mike, who we've had on the show before, and I'm eager to get him back on to sort of defend this because he's kind of cool with it. But, you know, I sort of jokingly said, you know, these characters have been in sort of the DCU so far. I mean, you get, like you said, Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, the Question. They're all kind of there now.
These versions are different, but I mean, if you look at Watchmen, and that's the only thing you take as your go-to, as what you're going to base this on, these characters do not fit into the new 52, and they don't fit into the old DC universe, and they're not going to fit into the new one comfortably.
I don't understand why the outrage. This is the one thing that there's a bunch of things that bother me about this, but this one I'm just like,
stop taking a classic comic story that was self-contained and trying to fit it into modern days. The creator of the fucking comic told you not to do Before Watchmen, and you did it anyway, and fair play.
Yeah,
characters.
This is a comic book company. They're going to do whatever they can to make money. If this bothers you for whatever reason, why, just ignore it. And here's the thing. It doesn't ruin those stories. If you have such a connection and attachment to those stories, it doesn't ruin those stories. It doesn't retroactively ruin those stories.
It doesn't, because those stories still exist, but it's still an insult to the writer, and it's an insult to the original story that you're doing this. They're not meant to exist outside of that story. Shit, I mean, the other thing is, like, you already have Blue Beetle, so why do you need Nighthawk? Now, the Question and Rorschach developed into very different characters, but Rorschach doesn't have any kind of special training. He doesn't have any superpowers. He's a crazy guy who beats up thugs.
Yeah, but
like, what are you going to do with him in the DC universe?
Because it's just something you could plug in. It's something that you could do marketing-wise. You know, someone who doesn't necessarily follow comics all that closely be like, oh, there's new Watchmen character comics. And with, you know, the regular DC characters, I may be more inclined to buy books now.
If I read a long-term storyline and, you know, all this bad stuff is happening and it turns out the villain is Ozymandias, I'll mark out a little bit. I'll think that's kind of cool. But other than that, long term, it doesn't make any sense, and it's just such a money grab. And the other thing is, the reviews I read of this, and I read a few, they talked about how this comic itself was incredibly good, and it'll remind you of the old DC because it's not all depressing, and it's more upbeat. And it, they said it feels nothing like the New 52, which was all people's heads getting ripped off and horrible things happening to characters. But at the same time they say that, we're told that the characters from Watchmen are being introduced into it. And it's like, so what? Are they happy versions of those characters?
Do you think people like you could be placated by saying this is another universe's Watchmen? That the Watchmen that happened in that Moore series is a separate Watchmen onto themselves, and this is completely different. Now they're using the term Minutemen.
The positives I will say is that it's something new. They've never done this before. And you're calling it Rebirth. There should be new stuff. It shouldn't just be, we're bringing the old Superman back. We're bringing the old Flash back. It shouldn't be that. You should have something new. And I don't know, maybe new versions of these characters will be all right. I'll give it a shot, because I want to read DC.
As do I.
I honestly and truly want to read DC, and I hate the New 52. I hate almost everything they've done in it.
Mm-hmm.
So this gives me an excuse to read it. It's just that one thing kind of gives me pause and questions where they're going with it.
Well, with that said, you know what? All things considered, we're talking about it at least. And say what you will, all bad and good things aside, it's getting people to talk about DC.
It is. And the leaks were intentional.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm skimming over this news article from Newsarama, and they bring up the fact that supposedly this all started in an issue of Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan, issue 4, where he talks about creating a new universe. But most people read that and wrote it off.
That's not what they originally intended.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, but it's one of those things that they're going to try to justify retroactively.
Fair enough.
And I think, in fact, I'm even looking at a panel from the original Watchmen. Dr. Manhattan talks about creating life as well, so.
Well, yeah, because he was God. That was his character.
Okay, but that's a new story. Like I said, for the most part, I'm right there with you, Alex. I'm not too super on board with this.
I'm reading the book.
Yeah, same here. And there's enough good. There's at least some titles going forward that should sort of justify this whole relaunch.
There might be. We're gonna have to find a way to fucking cut down on our comics so we can try new shit. But
well, trust me, there's plenty of Marvel stuff that's been on the bubble for the longest time. And if DC stuff really ups their game, I have no problem jumping a bunch of titles.
It's dropping off the bubble.
All right, let's.
The bubble is bursting.
All right, let's move on to our second news story. We have comic book sales. Let's go to our comic book sale news music. And I think you guys will appreciate it. Alright, we have the sales for, this is last month, April 2016. And let's look at number one, which should come
to Black Panther.
No surprise, Black Panther issue one at 253,000 copies.
I don't know, I thought it was a surprise.
I figured
it would be number one, but I didn't think it'd be that high.
You know what sucks about it? Issue two was like 10 times better.
Yeah, it was.
And I'm concerned that people read issue one and they thought, I tried it.
And here's an interesting factoid about that number. It seems unusually high. It's the number one selling book of 2016 so far.
You know what the good news is? Even if it drops in half, mm-hmm. it's still selling more than most comics.
Yeah, I know.
Still so.
Yeah, the closest thing that even comes close to it for the number two book is Star Wars Poe Dameron, which is 175,000. Which, pretty good, all things considered, at number one.
Yeah.
And from there, we have at number three, Dark Knight 3, Master Race, issue 4. Number four, we have Star Wars Special C-3PO. At number
wow, five. That's so 120,000.
Hey, people wanted to know Star why Wars. He had the red arm.
I didn't even read that.
And at number five, we have Batman, issue 51.
What happened in that issue?
I think
continuing story of Bruce Wayne coming back, right?
Yeah, it was sort of like an homage to, I guess, Snyder's run on Batman. It had a bunch of like letters. It was kind of a goofy issue, all things considered.
We're doing homages to a run that started like 5 years ago. Now that's kind of funny.
Yeah, but that was the crux of that issue. Number six, we have Gwenpool issue 1. 7, okay. Star Wars issue 18. Number 8, Darth Vader 19. Number 9, Harley Quinn and Suicide Squad April Fool's Special, issue 1. And rounding out the top 10, we have Amazing Spider-Man issue 10.
You know, I'm looking at this list. Spider-Gwen sells really well.
Well, it's okay. Spider-Gwen does well, and then Deadpool does well. So if you combine the two into Spider-Gwen,
But it's still an outlier. It's a number one. Let's see next month. We're looking at the main numbers. Let's see where it's at. We'll probably have issue 2 and 3. So,
oh, by the way,
that sells good.
The Miles book has gotten a resurgence because the Dirt issue is number 20 on this list.
Not bad.
That one was kind of dropping for a while, but it's kind of gotten up lately.
Well, it's good.
Doctor Strange still holds up. It's like the same 50,000 people read Doctor Strange.
Well, I'm glad.
Hey, I'm one of them.
Yeah, it's a good
book. Daredevil also has kind of increased.
I don't know why. I think that book's shit. I don't like Soul's run on it.
Yeah, it was one of those things that seemed like a match made in heaven, Soul and Daredevil, but it's one of those things where it just hasn't delivered so far.
Yeah, I don't even read it anymore.
I'm on the bubble, and if we start reading more DC books like we discussed earlier, this may be one of the books that bites the dust.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Charles Soule. I'm still a fan. I just don't like your Daredevil. Fucking, I stuck around a little bit after Ten Fingers left me a little non-enthused, but yeah, I just don't care.
Just Marvel kind of dropping off big time.
Well, that's because she's in every other fucking book now.
Yeah, but so is Deadpool.
She doesn't have the cachet as a Deadpool. I hate to break it to you.
Deadpool has a hit movie.
He's also a very popular character.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking at the Captain America Sam Wilson, the issue after Cap came back. It dropped back down.
Well, yeah, because you know what the draw is.
The bottom fell out. People realize, especially people like you, Dave, who are big fans of Cap, realize they don't have to read that book anymore.
Yeah, that book's probably getting dropped, too.
It got dropped by almost half. Almost half.
Oof. Yeah, well, you got to buy the Steve Rogers book now.
I know. Which we're going to be reading, by the way. Any more notes before we move on very quickly into graphic novels? Just do the top five?
Nah.
Okay. Number one, Wonder Woman Earth 1, hardcover, volume 1. Obviously, that's the Grant Morrison book.
Which I still haven't read.
Okay.
I've heard mixed reviews on that. Some people loved it. Some people absolutely hated it.
Isn't that usually all things Grant Morrison? Or is he universal?
Yeah, but I don't think it's not like a weird book. From what I've heard, it's just some people didn't like his version of Wonder Woman, and some people did.
Well, it's not an easy sell, Wonder Woman. In fact, you brought it up earlier that you would have read it earlier, but it's Wonder Woman.
Well, it's not that. It's had I known he was doing a Wonder Woman comic. I don't think DC did a really good job of advertising that.
If you had bought a DC book, they advertised the hell of it, but...
Well, yeah, but I rely on fucking press releases on Newsarama and shit.
That's true. Okay, and number two, we have Star Wars Vader Down. That was the Star Wars event. Number three, we have Rat Queens Volume 3, Demons. Number four, the Scotty Young book, I Hate Fairyland, Volume 1, Madly Ever After. And around the top five, we have Thanos Infinity Finale. I assume that's another Starling book that he ignores.
Fucking all Starling.
Yeah, he ignores all the continuity and just decides to tell whatever stories he feels like doing.
At least he ignores it now, and he doesn't, like, spend an entire issue explaining why none of that stuff happened.
Yeah.
Fucking asshole. I love that, man.
He figures he wrote the character, and the character's kind of, you know, popular, because...
I created the character. I am the only one who can write it, and Marvel's like, okay.
All other uses of Thanos are robots or fakes.
Yep, all of them. The one in Ultimates right now, it's a clone. It's an alternate dimension Thanos.
Except the one that Squirrel Girl beat. That one's legit.
Well, I would love to read his rebuttal to that. That's an amazing panel. Had the fucking Watcher confirm that it was the real Thanos.
That's how you know it's legit.
Oh, that was so good.
Okay, that's going to wrap up this week's news. Let's move on to our next segment, the lightning round. For this week's lightning round, we have Karnak, International Iron Man, Superman / Wonder Woman, and Future Quest. Let's open up with Karnak.
I like this.
You're the one then, because I think me and Dave weren't too keen on it.
No, I liked it a lot. It was a big fight issue. I thought some of the art in this was fucking cool looking.
I'll give you that.
The guy.
He does interesting things. On the behest of S.H.I.E.L.D., Karnak tracked down the inhuman youth, Adam Roderick, who was abducted by a splinter group of Hydra. And this led to the Chapel of the Single Shadow. And a bunch of creatures attacked him, white humanoid looking things.
Who had no flaws. But he still beat them.
Yep.
Is this kid's power? He can create people out of nothing?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was it, or is this cults manipulate him into thinking he could do stuff like that?
Well, the indication is he's an inhuman whose power is he could just make anything.
Like Molecule Man.
Okay.
Sort of, yeah.
Cool enough, but
on a smaller scale, but he went to rescue him, and the kid's like, no, it's good, I'm building things. Tell my parents I'm okay. I love them. And then he made everyone disappear, and Karnak's like, okay, S.H.I.E.L.D., blow this whole fucking place up. Karnak is, like, in this book, he so completely changed his character. He's a murdering fucking psycho. Like, he wants to kill everyone.
Well, the reason for him is that he thinks the church is representing an existential threat to life on Earth and needs to be destroyed, like, now.
Yeah, nobody's on board with him on this. Like, they're like, okay, well, Karnak said it. I guess we should go with it. He seems to know what's going on. But he's just so... He's an off-putting character.
Well,
because he's very matter-of-fact about everything. And given his powers, it completely makes sense. He's identified the root of the problem, and we must destroy it at the root. But, you know, he's not really a good guy. Not really.
He's not really a bad guy.
Yeah, he is the guy. Dude, if Karnak was in WWE, he would be so much more over than Roman Reigns.
That doesn't take very much, though.
I'm going to see if he debuts tomorrow. That'd be so fucking cool. Karnak comes in, just fucking... hits Reigns like at his pressure point and fucking kills him.
That'd be
awesome.
Oh
my god, that'd be amazing.
I'd pop for that.
Yeah, he could do the Samoan spike. Debilitating.
Ooh, will you say oh?
Oh god. Have you seen?
I'm gonna start calling you guys Oos.
Okay.
Oos. What's the next book, Oos?
Oh! It's International Iron Man.
Yeah, I'm not reading this anymore.
That's fine.
This was a bunch of flashback scenes painting the relationship between Tony and Cassandra. And Tony's adopted dad. You know, he's like, you know, she's a honeypot. You're a freaking idiot. You're falling for it. And, of course, you know, he didn't believe it. He's like, no, we really do love each other. So he escapes by building some sort of camouflage suit. And... he runs off that chick, and then he's like, oh, you know, my dad thought you were a honeypot, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then she was like, well, that's what I thought at first, but, you know, I liked you afterwards.
shouldn't this book be called International Young Tony?
Well, I think they're ending the flashback scene. I think they're ending the flashback scenes after this issue.
When that's over, I'll come back to it.
Because, you know, they do have present-day stuff. It's just that they're trying to give you a backstory to this character because she's new.
Yeah,
so
that's fine.
Just kind of intertwining stuff. I'm under the impression the next issue that's it, because I know issue 5 is when we're supposed to find out who his dad is.
Yeah, I'll read that.
Yeah.
Okay. Of the two Iron Man books, this is the one I like better. They're willing to tell different stories, and they're willing to take a different direction with the art. To me, this doesn't read like a Marvel book. It's like if Image got a hold of the Iron Man license and decided to release a book.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, I think.
It still has the trappings of an Iron Man book, like who cares? But that's the impression I get from reading this book.
Yeah, that's the trappings of an Iron Man book. Well, I don't give a shit about this, so it's obviously an Iron Man book.
Hey, give me a good Iron Man book and prove me wrong, right? Well, I guess there's that Ellis series, now that I think about it, it's on my head since we took
back. Matt Fraction had half a really good run on Iron Man.
Yeah, you and everybody else keeps bringing that up. I have to see if confirm for myself if that's true.
Only half of it was good. Yeah, Ellis did Extremis, right?
Yeah, that was great. I don't care anything about Iron Man. That was fantastic.
Well, Ellis is occasionally very good.
Well, more often than not. Right.
Yeah.
From there, let's move on to our next book, Superman Wonder Woman, which continues the storyline that set up in the last issue of Action Comics.
Half the art was all right.
By the way, this is issue
sucked.
This was issue 7 of 8 of the storyline, and we started reading it on issue 6.
Well, that's okay. We'll read issue 8, and then we'll be all caught up.
They were still battling. It was basically came down to Superman and Wonder Woman taking on that solar Superman. The original 52 Superman took his family to, he's got a new Fortress of Solitude in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really out of the way place, fucking Colorado.
Yeah. Well, it's in the mountains somewhere, you know, like in the mountains. Batman took, the new 52 Lois away from the battle scene. There was a pretty good scene where he kind of just dropped her off in the middle of nowhere in some gas station because she was driving him nuts.
Well, she's a bad person. She exposed Superman in this continuity.
Yeah. And then at the end of the issue, it looks like Supergirl caught wind of stuff that's going on, you know, with them, so.
I have no idea what's going on with the new 52 Supergirl. Absolutely no idea.
Nor do I care. Are we reading issue 8 of this or no?
Yes.
As well.
Okay.
Because Superman.
He's dying, right?
Yeah, Superman might die, and then we'll get real Superman back, and we'll be all ready for, well, Rebirth is coming out next week, so it'll probably take place after. I don't know.
I think the only Rebirth stuff we're getting next week is just going to be that Rebirth issue 1, and that's it. I think everything else is going to be regular.
Are they finishing up storylines in all the different books?
Yeah, I think that's what's going on here. They're still wrapping up.
Okay.
Stuff. Okay, and to round out this week's Lightning Round, I read Future Quest. That's the Hanna-Barbera gigantic crossover I read. You know, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't like an IDW book where they just had the license and they're just going to do whatever story paint by numbers. This is very much just basically a Johnny Quest story, and they're using some dimensional warp ways to try to bring everybody in. So in this book we had the beginning of Birdman. They set up Space Ghost. So hey, don't laugh. I'm a big fan of Hanna-Barbera cartoons. I go way back with
Does fucking Space Ghost host a talk show?
Not yet.
If he doesn't, I could not read this.
I kind of hope someone makes a comment of that. It's like kind of snicker while I read.
Hey, you gonna go do your show, brother?
So I have no idea what you're talking about. Or, you know, they bring up the fact that there's just this multiverse. Maybe they'll bring in another Space Ghost that hosts a talk show.
That'd be awesome.
And another Harvey Birdman who's an attorney at law.
See, that's what they gotta do. That's the gimmick.
Yes. All right, but I'll keep tabs on that. I'll let you guys know if it's any good. It's not terrible, but at the same time, it's not worth going out of your way to go read. All right.
Thank you.
All right, with that out of the way, let's go into this week's books. That was Monty on the Run.
Did fucking Dazza pick the music this week?
Why do you say that?
Because it's fucking Euro game.
Yeah, it's Euro. Monty on the Run.
No, I know what it is. I'm just saying, like, none of us fucking had a Spectrum or...
Well, and I've seen that song pop up in a lot of the, when they talk about great 8-bit songs. That's like the 1 Euro song.
There were a few because they had, their weird microcomputer boom had, you know, different sound capabilities. So the music from those things didn't really sound like any of the video game music we had. I'm not saying it's bad. It's a catchy little tune. It's just, you know, I just assumed Dazza picked it.
That would have been great, right? If we let Dazza pick a song for our show 1 week.
It would have made sense. And if he had to pick video game stuff, he'd probably pick something like that.
One of you guys needs to call, you know, take a week off and let Dazza come on the show.
He's not going to read all the fucking books that we read.
That's true. He does enough stuff already for the site as it is. So.
Yeah, he's busy. He's got to go fucking fly to Vegas to watch Invicta or whatever.
I say that knowingly. Was it 2 weeks ago? I went to an Invicta show, so I really can't talk.
Dazza wears a lot of hats for the halfguarded.com site.
I know. Comic book reader. Was it a...
Movie reviewer. Fucking Invicta reporter.
Yeah. In fact, if you haven't already, check out his Preacher article. I read that. Awesome.
Oh, I'm so hyped for that show Sunday. We should have mentioned that.
Yeah, I know. And I think he's currently working on a Civil War article, which I'm curious to see where Dazza weighs in on that.
The movie or the original comic?
The original comic book event in 2007.
That's a pile of shit.
Yeah, well, we'll see what Dazza thinks. All right. With that out of the way, let's go into this week's books, which include May 1, Astro City 35, Clean Room 8, Lucifer 6, Black Road 2, All New Wolverine 8, Ant-Man 8, Civil War 0, Haunted Mansion 3, Old Man Logan 6, Silver Surfer 4, Spider-Man 4, Spider-Woman 7, Squadron Supreme 7, Uncanny Avengers 9, Wraith 13, Wrath of the Eternal Warrior 7, and Exo Manowar Annual Number 1. Great haul of books this week.
Yeah.
It's kind of good when we retire the gimmick of Book of the Week, because especially when we start doing our reviews, there's going to be way too many books that I'm like, I can't pick which one I like the most.
Yeah, funny, I like a lot of books.
It's funny because earlier today you were like, you want to bring it back because I kind of want to bring it back. And now you're like, no, I don't want to do it.
But let's give it a couple of weeks and let's see how I feel. Okay. I think we're going to agree on most of the books this week that are pretty good. But I know right off the bat, the one book that me and Alex don't agree on is from Dark Horse this week. May issue 1, writer and artist Gene Ha.
Yeah, you hated it. I really liked it. So we strongly disagreed on this. I picked this because I like Gene Ha a lot. And I love the art in this. But I like the story, too.
There's nothing to go from here, though. There's no story. They set stuff up. But, okay, and maybe, you know, I'm not being fair because, you know, they're setting stuff up, so it's not necessarily a bad comic book just yet. But with that said, I'm not fully on board with this story.
Okay, in the first issue, they introduce you to what's going on in the plot, which was kind of a lot. They introduce you to two of the characters who are presumably the two most important characters. You got a sense for who they were. And then we move forward with the plot, and we're getting ready for the second one. This is a book that can literally go anywhere because they're dealing with, like, an alternate world. So the basic premise of it is May, or Mai, I assume it's May.
Yeah, M-A-E.
M-A-E.
Yeah.
Her sister disappeared when she was younger. And she finds out in this issue, because her sister was always running away, and it turned out she was running away to an alternate reality, which they kept saying, like Oz, which, you know, it wasn't like Oz, but there were talking cat people there, and she became the queen of them. Mm-hmm. But she has now come back, and she apparently needs her sister's help, but the cat people have, they are appearing in our world, mm-hmm. our normal world. So the adventure bit of this book is going to be presumably, they are going to end up in this alternate world. They have not done so yet.
Yeah, I know. Which is kind of misleading because you look at the cover and there's this giant cat and you think, oh man, what is this book going to be? Because they showed earlier in the book, they showed like these tiny little people. It's like, are they going to be traveling to a different dimension, or is this a story of small people? And it's like, all they did with this issue is establish the two characters and their relationship, and that's about it.
And the existence of an alternate universe.
Yeah, but they haven't gotten specifics.
I thought it was a good setting the stage point. And I also like the design of the fucking cat people, because they're like big. Like, they're not the, she compared them to teddy bears. They're kind of like Ewoks. But they're like walking around and they're wearing like human clothes, like disguises. But they're still clearly fucking cats with guns. I don't know why she was fighting with one of the cats.
Yeah,
she's
the queen of the cat people. Well, she brought up the fact that there was a revolution. She helped take over and become the queen. So.
And yeah, and they made her queen of the cat people. I forget what they were called. He gave them all names and stuff, like the name of their tribe and everything. But no, it's just you got to see, you know, normal stuff. You got introduced to May, and you got introduced to her sister, who I think her name was Abby, and then her friend, and I can't recall her name right now. I apologize. I read literally every single comic 2 hours before the show.
Well, then we also have to apologize because Dave didn't read it, and Dave is our go-to guy when it comes to recaps.
Yeah, I didn't read it.
It was basically just here are the characters. Gene Ha's a good artist. Here's the plot. And we have to wait for issue two to see where the plot is. Are you going to stop reading this?
You really put over the fact that you like this writer and this artist. That's another thing I didn't like about this book.
I don't know him as a writer.
Oh.
He was, but I thought he was good. He was the artist on, Alan Moore's top 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's done other work because he's well thought of. This looks completely different from anything he's ever done. But, in a lot of the full pages, he got very detailed. And it also has odd, coloring choices. It's not that it doesn't fit the book. It's just he did some interesting things with color. And I assume since he's writing and drawing this, he had a lot of input into everything that goes on in it. So the way he wants it to look.
I thought the art looked it looked a little too glossy, where it clearly looks like it was done on a computer and not necessarily.
That was the coloring. Most comics have computer coloring now.
But it was so transparent with this. Like I said, I brought up the fact that it reminded me of a webcomic, and that's the impression I got from this.
Yeah, but I mean, I could post full pages from this comic, and if people heard you say it looks like a webcomic and I showed them that, they'd be like, dude, you're fucking crazy. Like, there ain't nobody doing a webcomic who draws this well.
And the other sister, the one that went off to the other dimension, was Abby. And the main sister, our main character.
I got the name right.
Yeah, May and Abby are the two sisters that they established in this issue.
They don't really look that much alike. They both have weird hair.
That's the other thing that they have in common. But they're very different looking girls. I think May has glasses and dresses.
She's glasses.
And then, Abby, you know, she dresses like, well, I guess she was made up in the outfit, but she kind of dressed like a tomboy without the glasses.
Well, she was fighting in the other dimension.
Yeah.
So she would dress differently.
Okay.
But, you know. We'll see. I'm gonna keep reading this because I was interested.
Depending what kind of have we load when the next issue comes of this, I'll put it on the maybe pile.
Well, I will say this: in the first issue, mm-hmm. we got more about what's going on than we've gotten in four issues of Monstrous, and we still read that.
Yeah, but that art's a lot better and that story's a lot better, and the characters are established better.
I actually think the story in this is very strong because of how much it did. In such a short space. Whereas in Monstrous, there's only two characters who we have any sense of. And it's, you know, little girl whose character is she's a little girl and tortured slightly older girl. Okay. But like, they're not the most compelling characters on Earth. I don't mean to trash Monstrous. I always defend it. It's just, you know.
This might be like a book later on when we review that. I'm kind of glad you stuck around, made us read this book, because you know it's obviously
made you read it. Marvel didn't even try it.
Well, I'm talking about another book, but I'll bring it up when we get to it. And the book definitely isn't our next book from DC Vertigo. We have Astro City 35, writer Kurt Busiek, art by Randall.
Well, he's mining his back catalog and. Dealing with long-running characters who he never really did much with. Mm-hmm. And this time it's Cracker Jack.
No, Jack in
the Box. No, it's Jack in the Box.
Or Jack in the Box, sorry. Cracker Jack was last time. Yeah, it's Jack in the Box, the jester-looking fella.
This is a spotlight on three generations of Jack in the Box, as the second Jack in the Box son must decide whether to follow in the family footsteps or take another path. You know, we got the story about the original one. You know, he was from the 60s. He ended up dying. He was taking on some guy called the Underlord, and his dad, you know, the second Jack in the Box, he was he took up in his footsteps up until he was born, because he didn't want his son to be without a father because he was without a father. But you know, that didn't stop him from trying to, you know, go out there and try to be a superhero.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to be one because he got injured trying to do superhero stuff.
Well, it's not just that he got injured. It was something to where it permanently messed up his leg. Like he said he could still walk, but he had a bit of a limp.
His knees messed up, so he can't do the flippy shit anymore. Yeah. I thought the grandfather, the way he became a superhero was kind of an interesting story. He worked for a toy company and he was like a genius, but this was in the 50s or the 60s and he was like token black guy. And like they showed like his white bosses coming up and like, oh, you're doing great, Johnson. Good job. Oh yeah, you're working really hard. But then they never gave him any credit for anything he did and they never gave him a bonus or everybody else would have got one. And then he found out they were taking his designs, which were for toys, and they were developing weapons with them and selling them to criminals. And that's, he then used the technology he developed to become a superhero so that he could get his bosses, basically.
Well, not just for revenge, just, you know, for Justice League, for justice purposes, and then obviously that's what he used the technology for.
Yeah, but it was a nice, you know, tie-in because they fucked him, and then he exposed them and got them arrested, which is good. But I liked the kid, the youngest one, the one who can't be Jack in the Box, and his whole thing is he's like, my dad was a superhero. My grandfather was a superhero. I should be a superhero, but he doesn't want me to be. And when I tried, I fucked up my legs, so now I can't be a superhero. And that's, you know, that's kind of an interesting story that we haven't got a lot. The third generation who can't follow in his father's and his grandfather's footsteps.
Well, it's a thing where when the family finds out what happened, they are not cool with it. And in fact, you brought up the fact that the father was also a superhero, but he stopped doing it the second he had his son because he didn't want to risk leaving his son behind.
Yeah, and he had a really good justification for it. He's like, there are a bunch of other superheroes. Like, it's not like I'm doing anything that no one else could do. Like, somebody will take over for me. Because there's so many fucking superheroes in Astro City. It's not a big deal if I stop. Which, you know, logical. Spider-Man would never do that.
Hey, it's funny.
Spider-Man has a different gimmick.
Also, in this issue, you know, they're excavating the site of where the grandfather died, and they uncover Mr. Drama out of all this.
Well, his mask.
Yeah, something's going on here.
Well, it's his mask, and then apparently his widow shows up, who's in a female version of his costume, and decides, since they found his mask in the ground, that is proof that they killed him.
I'm just curious. His name's Mr. Drama. What would the wife's name be?
Mrs. Drama?
No.
Drama Queen?
No. It was Drama Queen this book.
Oh, yeah, Drama Queen.
for those of you who didn't read the book, the way they make up, was it Mr. Drama? The way his whole shtick is set up, like, obviously he has the drama mask on, but his whole setup is, it's, I guess, akin to Two-Face, where one side of his costume is one color and the other side is another.
It's a cool costume.
Yeah, it's cool.
He looks like, he looked a little bit like, Johnny Sorrow from DC, who I always thought had a cool design. He's had a mask and he wore a cool suit.
Let me look this up now that you brought it up.
A little bit. It didn't have the dual thing.
Oh, okay, I see it now. Yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah. Well, he has-
Oh, Johnny Sorrow, by the way, super cool character. If he takes his mask off and looks at you, you die. That's his power.
It's like Cabal from Mortal Kombat 3.
Well, yeah, but not goofy as fuck.
Yeah, I know. And for one thing I feel like discussing, you brought up earlier sort of in the issue, but this is a book I was halfway through reading, and it's like, oh, that's right, they're African-American. It's like, and it's one of those things to where I'm glad they didn't beat you over the head with it, because when you have a story like this that's really good, they'll make that the centerpiece, or they'll, you know, obviously be part of the story. This is a story that, you know, like I said, halfway through I had to be reminded, oh, that's right, these are people.
No, I mean, it was there in the story because, like, you know, you had the grandfather's part, but, his dad, it wasn't really an issue for him. And then the son, it wasn't really an issue for him either. I mean, a part of that was because his dad owned a toy company and was rich as balls. So black or not, if you're super rich, you're not gonna, you know, you're probably not gonna deal with the same things as, like, you know, a black kid from, you know, down the streets or whatever, like the grandfather was. And it's also changing times, you know, he came up in modern days. But, you know, the thing that reminded you of it was Jack in the Box had, like, followers, like people who just decided to put on vague costumes and just kind of run around after him and help him fight crime, mm-hmm. the Trouble Boys, which is such a fucking, like, 70s name, and it's... Well, it's a little gay, actually, but well, whatever.
That's a lot they of characters that, in this Astro City and, where it's sort of a throwback.
Yeah, it is, and especially this story, which is dealing with, you know, 60s and 70s superheroes. But they all ended up founding, like, you know, community outreach centers and stuff. It was very much a story told from, you know, we came from this point and we are not white. But, yeah, they didn't beat you over the head with it, but it was there. It's because Busiek's not an untalented writer, yeah, and he can do that, and it felt natural. It didn't feel forced.
Yeah,
this is the way things would have been.
Yeah, most writers or even writers with some, I guess, experience on the belt would feel the need to do stuff like that, and it's kind of refreshing. You didn't feel the need to go to that well.
The funny thing is, Busiek's like an old white guy, so it's not like he has any special insight. He's just an old white guy, but he happens to be a very talented writer, so he can get away with it a little better than, you know, Mark Miller could. Well, he's fucking Scottish. Like, come on. You don't know what it's like to be black in America, brother.
All right, from there we're going to move on to another Vertigo book, Clean Room, Issue 8, writer Gail Simone, art by John Davis Hunt.
They're not aliens, they're demons, I told
you.
Do you even still know that?
Well, that's what she said.
Maybe I was thinking the other day, what if they're like those things in the fourth Indiana Jones movie?
That movie sucks.
Yeah, I know. Is that really the comparison you want to draw right now?
Yeah, because they're not quite aliens, but they're not quite...
Hey, she said they're demons and said the devil's coming.
I just feel aliens is a much stronger choice.
Well, because of aliens, because of stuff in the sky. And
the big thing in this book was Astrid got shot.
Yes.
And she's going to die. And she wants Chloe to be her replacement because Chloe can see the fucking demons.
Yeah, the shit that only she, apparently.
Yeah, so Chloe could see it too. And even though her second, like she had... Killian, she had a message for her that she was to watch upon her incapacitation or death. She watched this message, and the message was basically like, hey, demons are real. That's what we're fighting here.
You're a follower and you can't lead, so.
Yeah, she's such a bitch. But she's like, I need someone who's more like me, so you have to go get this girl.
And she did.
Hates us.
And she did go get her.
She did, yeah, she went and got her because her boss told her to. And she was instructed to bring her to Astrid, who would only be operated on in the clean room. And she has to be brought directly to her, and she brings her hillbilly buddies and her new cop boyfriend. But when she walks in the clean room, she's like, oh, hey, this is my friend. It's this guy. But hey, look here. And he's the fucking demon busts out of his head.
That was awesome.
He's like, hey, what's up?
I'm disappointed that's a demon, but that last panel where they show him with the demon crawling out the face, that was awesome.
It was good art. The key of it is they don't really want to get away from it. This chick hates Astrid because she blames her for her fiance's death.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like she ever came to an understanding with her. She's like, oh, okay, I understand why you made him kill himself. No, she didn't. She still fucking hates her. And she's had conversations with these demons where, you know, they might not have gone as badly as Astrid's, whose whole goal is, well, we got to kill all of them and we do whatever we can to beat them. Well, Chloe doesn't really, you know, they haven't particularly done anything to her yet.
Good time.
It was just an interesting way to go with it.
Like I said, I'm still on board, but I'm not totally cool with the idea of them being demons. I feel like that's an easy out. It's like, oh, demons naturally want to do evil stuff like that. And I think aliens, you could have gone so many different directions.
I don't see why it's better with aliens. Don't we have a lot of books with aliens in it?
But you wonder with aliens, it's like, are they, you know, you never know their motivation. Are they just here to wreck shop? Are they just, you know, prisoners, or are they trying to take over Earth, or,
well, they could. I mean, she doesn't necessarily know. They may still not be demons, but, you know, I just aliens, like, they all look different.
True.
Like, if they're aliens, wouldn't they all look the same?
Not necessarily.
And it, they've it also could, shown, because the ones who talk to Chloe, planets. they're not all, like, the same level of evil. Like, there was the one who warned her about the butcher or whatever he was called, the surgeon. I forget what his fucking name was. But he came to warn her about that one. So that guy didn't seem, you know, that bad in comparison. So, you know, they're not all horrible.
Okay. Speaking of demons, let's move on to our final Vertigo book, Lucifer, issue 6, writer Holly Black, art by Stephanie Hans.
Great fucking art in this. Yeah. And,
nice art, yes.
Another really good issue. Lucifer did not appear in this issue at all.
No, not at all. This is this issue introduces us to a young man named Takehiko, who is his son. Remember, he had something with that one Japanese demon woman or something.
It was like the Japanese death deity, which is from the. Technically, it's from the old Lucifer series. But yeah, he apparently had a kid, which is weird because he has no, you know, he's not equipped, but you know, whatever. I guess
they do it differently. I don't know.
Yeah, he has double powers. It's all right. He made his dick appear or something. It's okay. Hey, biblically, the angels had kids with human women, so. It's all right. The Nephilim, dude. Look it up. It's fucked up. Real reason for the flood.
The dude is, he's dating a gal named Rosemary, and he's introduced to her parents who happen to be Satanists. You know, not the kind that talks
real to Satanists. No, they gave a good description of Satanists. Satanists are like one step removed from objectivists, pretty much. It's all about, you know, self-interest and that. And they give a pretty good explanation of it. They don't actually, you know, sacrifice animals and shit. It's mostly about sex
But they did mention it's like, yeah, some do worship the guy with the goats with the horns, some, but not most.
Yeah, but it's not the common practice. But they it was so funny when they did the description of the Satanists where they're like, yeah, they still have the church, but you know what happened was they all did it and they had lots of sex and they did lots of drugs and then they got married and had kids and grew up
and got boring.
Yeah, and now they're not as into it. But it turned out, one of them had killed a girl.
Yes.
Well, they didn't really kill her. What happened was they had a shit ton of drugs and she overdosed. And the church ended up getting lit on fire. They tried to summon a demon to bring her back to life and it apparently sort of worked. Like kind of. But not really. And so they bring the devil's kid into the church and they fuck with him, which I thought was hilarious. Like they got the fucking, they're all naked and they got the one guy with the fucking demon horns on and stuff. And they walk up to him and they stab him and he's like, what the fuck is this? But it's a fake knife, like a kid's toy knife, the one that retracts when you stab somebody with it.
They set it up like they were going to sacrifice him. It's like, haha, yeah, it was a ploy. Yeah. She's done this to a bunch of guys now. We're going to sacrifice you to our Satan Lord.
It was funny, too, because, like, the girlfriend was freaking out. But then, you know, he found out, haha, we were just kidding. Like, we don't do that shit. Well, he gets pissed off. So he summons Asmodeus. He summons an actual demon to fuck with them. But the actual demon comes up, and he's like, hey, bro, listen, this your girlfriend? She'd come with you, and this guy... He kind of sold his soul to us back in the day to bring this chick alive. So he's coming with us too. He could be like your advisor or whatever, but we got to go back to hell because, Lucifer's back and you got to take over down there. So we got to go now. So he just kind of takes him and his girlfriend and this other dude and brings him down to hell because him and Asmodeus are going to, you know, they're going to take over and they got to do it before Lucifer, you know, comes. I don't know why they think Lucifer wants to take over. Lucifer has no interest in being in hell anymore, but they don't know that. So, yeah, they brought him in. Yes. It was a funny issue. It wasn't played up for laughs. It was meant to be serious, but it was, there was a lot of humor in it.
One of the guys did, in fact, make a deal with a demon, by the way. And he's taking him as a servant.
Yeah, and I liked the ghost of the girl who was kept alive, and the mom's like, I can't believe you slept with that skank. And she's like, I don't give a shit if she's dead. I'm gonna beat her ass.
That was 20 years ago.
She goes to like beat the shit out of the ghost. And then he's in hell with his new girlfriend, who seems to think it's pretty cool. She grew up a Satanist, so I imagine she would. That was a good issue. I mean, the whole point of it was we're going to have, you know, apparently Lucifer against his son. And another demon, a more experienced demon. But this kid, given his parentage, is probably pretty fucking powerful. Like, it didn't take him a lot of effort to summon a demon. He just kind of yelled and shit blew up, and then he's like, all right, Uncle Asmodeus, get up here. And he's like, okay. And he came up.
My only real criticism of this, it was this complete departure. It's like a completely different character with a completely different artist. Kind of threw me for a loop. I even told Dave, I'm like, what the hell happened with Lucifer? Why is it a completely different? Like,
well,
did I miss something?
They're setting up something for him to do, because we just found out who killed God. We don't know exactly why he did. Maybe this is a part of it. Maybe this is the long game. Like, Asmodeus was behind this. He's going to use the kid in some way so he can eventually seize control of hell. But to do this, he also had to kill God, and he's going to have to remove Lucifer for some reason. Like, I've sort of gotten a sense for how this writer writes, and everything so far is tied in. So I think this is more than just, okay, we're going to do Lucifer versus Sun. Like, there's more to it than that. Because she hasn't shown so far that she's just like, all right, well, that part of the story's done, so we're just going to jump to something else now. I bet it's all connected in the end.
I wouldn't doubt that. It's just one of those things to where it was a little jarring. We've had a different artist, and this new artist is a little bit different. The story felt a lot darker. The story hasn't been super dark in the Lucifer story, but at the same time, you know, it has serious moments. But
dude, we had that one issue where the crazy lady murdered children. That was pretty fucking dark. Like, there were no children murdered in this one.
I think
one.
It's more so the art than anything else, because it's still kind of lighthearted, you know, bright colors and whatnot. This was very, it was a lot darker, the art.
Well, yeah, but it fit the tone.
True.
Because it was a darker story. It was very accomplished art, I thought, but yeah, it was different, but that's fine. I would love this artist when they go to hell to get to draw lots of hell stuff.
I'd be fine with this artist picking up from here on in, and the old artist never coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I like the old artist. I've never had a problem with the art in this book.
No, but this new artist is a lot better.
Yeah, but looking at this, I don't think this new artist is going to be able to keep up a monthly schedule.
Okay.
It's because, you know, it's not, you know, some books you look at and you're like, wow, this looks really good. And then you realize this person is never going to be able to do this every month. It's just not going to happen. It's too, the artists who look more like they're painting, they never keep monthly schedules.
That's true.
Because I think just that style of art, as opposed to the more like cartoony style, it just can't be done as fast. But, you know, they have a month. So,
and since we're talking so much at length about the artist's art, in fact, the artist that we're talking about here is Stephanie Hans. So that's
very good.
We really got to put over Stephanie Hans.
And there's a female writer and a female artist, and it's a book mostly about men.
Yeah, she's drawn Angela, and she's drawn Wicked and the Divine. So
that's a popular book, isn't it? Wicked and the Divine.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so I don't think she needs us trumpeting her artwork. But with that said, yeah, we'll just put her over. And oddly enough, you look at those two books, they're very, the theme of the books is also very similar.
Well, that's probably why they picked her for a reason.
Okay. From there, let's move on to our only Image book this week, Black Road, Issue 2, writer Brian Wood, art by Jerry Brown.
I like this, and I don't know why.
I liked it.
It's funny, I didn't like this, and I don't know why.
Well, it's a very simple story.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem with it. I thought it was very simple, and I'm just like, eh.
It's basically a revenge story with a lot of killing and a lot of violence, but,
yeah.
You know, I can get behind that.
Yeah, Magnus is, kind of like helping out Julia. sparring with her for a bit, you know, to prove that she's up to task for at least, you know, surviving the Black Road.
And she can fight.
Yeah. They tracked down one of her father's attackers in an isolated village. And he claims that the reason that they attacked him was because he wasn't actually a Christian. So Magnus quickly deduces that they've wandered into a Christian theological dispute of some kind. And,
which is correct.
Yeah. So after letting Julia take the man's life, they head back down the road. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that was it. Lots of killing. He had her kill a member of the church who...
Yeah, the guy they tracked down.
Who pointed out they killed the cardinal he was supposed to protect because he was a heretic.
I like how he didn't believe in baths. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah, he's like, baths are for infants. And she's like, well, people judge you by how you look. And he's like, no, they judge you by your actions.
Which are both technically true. Baths.
Well, times were different back then. Yeah. I don't think the people in shithole, wherever they are, where are they?
I'm not really sure.
It's like,
I don't think they ever actually said.
If they're Vikings, wouldn't this be like in Iceland?
No, but Vikings were all over the place, and then depending on the era, you know, they could be in Ireland, they could be in frickin' Scandinavia somewhere, they could be in, you know, who knows.
Somewhere, anywhere in Europe or surrounding area, but the, you know, the whole thing is like those people, like, they don't exactly live comfortable lives. So, honestly, bathing is probably not a priority for them. So, you know, his view on that would be different from her, who presumably comes from somewhere nicer. I don't know if she's from Rome or not, but they said she was a Jew.
Yeah, they called her Jew.
They didn't, early days of the Christian church, you know, despite what the Bible says, they didn't like the Jews much.
This is like, I think this book is 13th or 14th century.
Yeah, but it's after the church started making its big push. You know, because they were talking about they were annoyed because they keep putting up their ugly ass churches everywhere and force converting the towns. So, yeah. No, it was a good little action story, really.
I think that's my problem with the book. It's too generic. It's too action-y. If it wasn't for all the religious stuff that they bring up, all the Christian stuff they mentioned in the background, it's not really focal to the story, but it's the backdrop. If it wasn't for that sort of being sort of historically accurate, I don't think I'd have any... I don't think I'd care about this book in any way, so that kind of...
I wouldn't use the word generic, because we don't really read another book like this. So generic isn't the right word. I mean, maybe a little uninspired would work, but that doesn't always mean it's bad. I mean, we read a shit ton of superhero books that don't do anything different, and they're just fine.
That's true. Speaking of you bringing up superheroes, let's move on to Marvel when we have our first superhero book, All New Wolverine, Issue 8, writer Tom Taylor, art by, let's see if I can pronounce this, Marcio Takaria.
I'm a fan of this this teaming up of Wolverine and Gabby.
Well, Gabby's far and away the star of this book.
Yeah, I think they make a cute team. The book opens up and they're walking her pet Wolverine down the street. And this isn't important to the plot. It was just funny. An old lady walks up to him and you're like, you can't walk that dog here. It's dangerous. And she's like, what kind of fucking dogs does this old lady think it is? It's not a dog. She's talking about it's my pet Wolverine. And, you know, Wolverine talks to her, Laura, about how, you know, maybe you need to learn something. Maybe you need to go to school. And she's like, I'm not going to fucking go to school. I grew up in a clone tank like you, and they pumped me full of information. I don't want to learn anything else. I already know everything. I'm good. She's like, well, you need to learn something. So she orders her Chinese cake.
One thing you haven't learned in that tank, you haven't learned what 25 tastes like. She's like, what the hell is 25?
25 with chicken. Yeah. So she gets her 25 with chicken, and Maria Hill calls and needs Wolverine to work on something because there's like a this is where it got ridiculous. The book actually opened up before we got the Wolverine walking part. With, there's a box and S.H.I.E.L.D. lands on this boat to get these people and get this box from them. But the box opens up, and then everybody disappeared. Mm-hmm. We didn't see what happened. We don't know what's in the box. Like the Shield's got the box. And they open the box up, and they look at it, and they're like, well, there's like some kind of weird liquid in it. And, you know, old man Logan, by the way, has disappeared. And Laura had to talk about, you know, it even said when they showed it on the screen, it said like alternate timeline or from the future.
It said alternate dimension, alternate timeline.
Yeah, they didn't know, but he's not her Wolverine, and she knows that. She's apparently encountered him before. We haven't seen it. But he also disappeared because they brought him in to track the missing team. So she quickly realizes when S.H.I.E.L.D. opens up the box that it is, it's basically, sent to draw something in. Who does it draw in? Fin Fang Foom.
Yeah.
Who has appeared in another book. And this makes her realize, I know where Wolverine is. Wolverine has apparently been eaten by him. So, Laura here decides to jump into Fin Fang Foom. Presumably Gabby will be with her to go rescue Wolverine.
Yeah.
The cover of the next book is amazing because keep in mind Gabby is like 13. Mm-hmm. So the cover of the next book is old man Logan with the claws out ready to fight. Wolverine with the claws out ready to fight and fucking Gabby, 13-year-old little girl holding two guns. Just fucking blasting them. I'm kind of surprised Marvel is letting this happen.
Because it's, you know, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, in modern days, it's cute. It fits the character, but it's still, you know, a little girl with two guns shooting stuff up.
You bring up the fact that Fin Fang Foom was attacking the S.H.I.E.L.D. Harry Killer, and I like that Gabby's all, oh, so this is what happened when a giant lizard and a flying space fortress love each other very much.
Yeah, because they explain its pheromones. But it just came to eat it. Like, well, it probably showed up and it's like, oh, I can't fuck a helicarrier. I'm gonna tear this shit up.
Paint switch.
It made sense. No, this is a really fun book. It's not like overly funny. I don't mean fun in that way. I mean, it's just good little action stories and you like the characters and you like even
Wolverine does all the serious stuff you'd expect a Wolverine type character to do.
And but Gabby, Old Man Logan is the serious book.
But I'm saying it's specifically Gabby who brings in the yucks, which I'm kind of glad. It kind of takes the edge off this book. Stops it obviously from being Old Man Logan, so.
Yeah, it's nothing like Old Man Logan, which is a very, very different book, which is good because the character should be different.
All right. Speaking of comedy books, Astonishing Ant-Man Issue 8, writer Nick Spencer, art by Ramon Rosanas.
It's like an issue of Superior Foes.
I loved it so much.
That's exactly how I read.
Pretty much. It read just like it. And, you know, Spencer's upset that his book got canned, so he brought it back here in a book that's not selling particularly well, so I'm not.
It's still
sure.
Selling better than that book.
It is selling better than Superior Foes, but if he keeps this up, it may go the same way.
I know Superior Foes by the end was selling like 12,000.
Yeah, it's pretty well. Once you announce a book is getting canceled, sales drop off because people stop trying it. And they're what's the point?
But even before that, it was like in the 18,000 range.
Yeah, no, it never sold good. But I'm just saying, when you cancel the book, sales always drop.
In this issue, Ant-Man and the Beetle put together a crew of all the latest villains. Whirlwind, The Voice, Hijacker, and The Magician. And each villain responds to the hench app request, and they meet up at a bar to play cards before their new...
Hijacker was one of the Superior Foes, by the way. He was, what was his name, Overdrive?
Yeah.
And they made fun of him because he keeps changing his name. And his name wasn't Hijacker. It was,
Hitchhiker. No, it was Hijacker.
It was Hitchhiker.
No. They made fun of him. Okay. It was Hijacker, but they're right, like, you should be Hitchhiker.
Makes more sense.
Yeah. It's like, it'll make more sense and it's good for your brand. And
yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. The Magician is, a new villain. He's getting into the villainy game, but he's not quite a villain yet.
Haven't we seen him in something else? Was it in this book?
I don't remember.
He and his dad, and I think was, or somebody in his family was a magician. And he's kind of like, you know, he's he's gathering up all his stuff and kind of like following in his footsteps.
Yeah, he's not really sold on being a criminal, but he thought he should try it.
And obviously he's there to talk to the veterans. Just, you know, they show him the ropes. They give him some advice. They're like, oh, you should go to places like Florida where there's not a whole bunch of superheroes. You can get away with a lot of stuff.
I thought they gave him good advice. Like, like, you know, never work for the Nazis. Yeah. He's like, the Nazis? And they're like, yeah, because the fucking, he's like, Zemo, or, you know,
Red Skull,
they'll kill you. They'll shoot you with their death rays. Like the, and then one of them's like, and they all have death rays.
So the price, like, the price for failure with them is always death. And you don't want, yeah. So the money's really good, but you never want to deal with them because chances are they're turning on you.
And they're like, you want to work with one of the lower to mid-level guys, like maybe Tombstone or something. They're like, Tombstone is better than Kingpin. Because like, these are the guys who probably won't kill you, and they still pay pretty good.
He's like, in fact, that's how I got this Invisalign. I got a dental plan.
Yeah, he said working for Count Nefaria. He got a dental plan.
My favorite part is when they're giving him tips how to work in New York. He's like, you're going to inevitably can't help yourself. You're going to want to work in New York. But by all means, stay in Midtown. They're like, why Midtown? Because like, that's where Spider-Man's at. And chances are, if you laugh at his jokes, he'll just web you up.
Yeah, he'll go easy on you. They're like, don't go to Hell's Kitchen, though. Because then Daredevil's there, and he's got some anger control issues. And if you see Punisher, just fucking run.
My favorite, it's run, hide, pray.
I love the even, like, the super-powered ones, like Whirlwind and shit. They're like, don't fuck with the Punisher. put my boy over strong. Because he will straight shoot your ass in the head.
They eventually get in a fight because the magician was trying to cheat at cards. Although at the end of the
just a forced habit because of the card thing.
Yeah, but they were going to take advantage of him and steal his shit.
Well, because he's a young kid and they got, you know.
Yeah, they got to haze him. He's a new guy.
Make him pay his dues. But
Ant-Man and the Beetle, they break up the fight, and then the Beetle has to break up the next fight when all the villains turn on Ant-Man.
Which is really funny because it was the art comedy where Beetle is sitting at the bar and she's like ordering a martini while the fighting's all going on behind her. She just didn't care. Like Ant-Man's fighting them. The villains are all fighting each other. She's just sitting there having a drink.
Or when they find out when he's cheating, they threaten. He's like, Whirlwind, cut him in half just for the irony of him being a magician.
Well, they're not like threatening villains. It's fucking Hitchhiker and Hijacker.
Whirlwind kind of is.
Whirlwind kind of is, but he's already been jobbed out.
And also, speaking of job, Cassie Lang, she sneaks into Cross Industries and her new Stinger guys. But no sooner does she arrive at the server room that she's confronted by Cross and his goons. And that's where the issue ends.
He's going to steal her heart again.
I don't know.
He's already got a heart.
Yeah, well, he's got her heart, right?
Yeah, so he doesn't need to.
Okay. Solid issue. This is the best Ant-Man book that I've read in a while.
It was fun, but this is just such a non-consequential book.
Yeah, I think that's
the problem. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, if it was up to me, the best-selling books would be all the comedy books, but, you know.
Yeah, well.
Speaking of book, I'm probably sure it's going to have no problem selling particularly well. Civil War 2, issue 0. Writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Oliver, let's see if I can pronounce this, Capoya?
Okay, guess what book I forgot to read.
Oh, you fool.
I forgot to read this.
Honestly, straight up, I can tell you right now, I was considered putting this in the lightning round because not a whole lot happened this issue.
But we do kind of see what's the premise of what they're going to be fighting over. Mm-hmm. Apparently, S.H.I.E.L.D. and the government are entrapping former villains or people who they suspect could be villains. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of reminds me of To Catch a Predator. Like, they put them in a room and, you know, like, oh, yeah, we're going to plan this and that. And then, you know, once they know that they're going to go through with some shit, then they arrest them.
Yeah, because the book opens with She-Hulk and she's defending this supervillain that the, I guess, S.H.I.E.L.D. picked up.
The Jester.
The Chester, yeah. They
Jester.
Him. Chester, I'm sorry, my mistake. Thanks, Dave.
No, Jester, not Chester.
You want to do the review?
Yeah, I will.
Okay, thank you.
she represents the Jester in court. And he's facing charges stemming from talking unawares to an undercover agent and paid informant. She argues that no one should be jailed for crimes that only exist in the abstract and have no actually been committed. And to do so is like prosecuting for simply having a criminal thought. So yeah, it's entrapment.
Thought crimes.
Freaking, Captain Marvel, she laments to Doc Samson about living in a constant state of averting one crisis after another and how she wishes there was just that one thing that existed to protect the world from incoming threats. And elsewhere, we have, James Rhodes. He has to sit down with the president. We don't know who he is. He's just a dark, shadowy figure of a president. He offers him the job of Secretary of Defense. And he says that it's a stepping stone to a presidential run.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, President, War Machine.
Oh, you need to bring up the fact that why he specifically chose Rhodey.
Because, it's inevitable that one day one of the superhero community will run for office, and the president says that he thinks Rhodey would be the guy he'd want running.
Because he's a government tool.
Well, he's also afraid of someone like Tony getting to power. He figures with all of his money, he'll just buy his way in and eventually just start running the place, and we've seen the way Tony runs things, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
It was a good scene. I like that scene. Mm-hmm. It sets up a really cool possible future for him. You know, his second act as a president describes it.
Yeah.
We also see the inhuman awakening of Ulysses, who goes into a cocoon after being exposed to Terrigen Mist. And he emerges at the end looking physically unchanged, but subject to what would be assumed to be a vision of mass destruction. I don't know if it's a vision or if he actually did all that, but...
Well, remember, we were told the plot of this is going to be...
Oh, okay, yeah. So, yeah, that's a vision of what's to come. Yeah, you're right.
The heroes fight over whether or not they should use this person to arrest people for crimes they haven't committed yet.
Yep, that is correct. Also, we learned that the Jester was killed in prison. And, what's her name? I think it was Maria Hill who tried to convince... She-Hulk is like, well, look, he was a bad nobody and this and that. He was going to commit another crime. But she's like, well, you don't know that.
No, he was just talking shop. He was talking about the good old days. You don't know if he's going to do anything.
Yep. But, you know, he's dead now.
Yeah, there was some altercation when he was in prison and now he's dead. Which is kind of messed up when considering he did nothing wrong. And the Maria Hill's always like, well, you've dealt with these supervillains long enough. You know they always tend to go back to their old ways. So that was kind of a bummer. But yeah, that was the crux of the issue. Obviously, this is issue zero, so they're not going to go full bore with the story just yet. But yeah, with this issue zero, they kind of set the table.
Yeah.
Okay. Good enough.
Sounds fine.
All right. From here, we're going to go to our next Marvel book, Haunted Mansion, issue 3, writer Joshua Williamson, art by George Coleo.
Yeah, I told you I didn't read this.
Oh, my mistake. I thought you had read it.
Yeah.
No, I had to hurry through. And I decided Haunted Mansion, while I enjoy it, you know, do I really need to read this? No.
No, it was more so, I'll do a very quick review since I'm the only one that read it. That pirate ghost that they established in that issue shows up to the party. He's threatening the kid. Obviously, he wants to use the kid to help him escape the islands and go back to being a pirate. But to do so, he needs to go to the attic, and apparently because he's the only one that's human, he can only one that can actually go to the attic to talk to, I guess there's an old lady ghost in there, and I guess I don't know how this ties into him leaving the island, but apparently she's the key, and he's the only one that can go to the attic.
Oh. Okay.
It continues with the Haunted Mansion series so far, where it's not a super in-depth story, but it's kind of a fun book, and the writing's well enough to where you don't feel like you're wasting your time. So, and again, you kind of missed out, but if you were really pushed for time, I wouldn't blame you for missing this book.
Yeah.
All right, from there, we're going to move on to our next book, Old Man Logan, Issue 6, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino. Did anyone other than me read this?
I didn't
read what? Read what?
Old Man Logan.
Oh, no, this is really good. Super violent, which I want. This is the Wolverine book I want. Like, I like the other one, but from an Old Man Logan book to question, like, okay, he's in the X-Men now. We move past the he's going to kill all the people thing. We need a story now. Mm-hmm. And this reads like a Wolverine story. So it's very good because it's him pointing out, like, oh, I'm up here. I'm not with the X-Men. I'm protecting this young girl. So what do? They have the Reavers come in. And what does Wolverine do? He fucking murders two of them because no one gives a shit about these characters. They came into the town to get Wolverine, makes Wolverine realize, fuck, I came to this town to protect her, but the only reason she's in danger is because I came to this town. Because, of course, people show up looking for Wolverine. This book still has the same artist, who is fantastic, and even if the story was bad, I would probably still read this book to see the art, because it's fucking awesome. One of the best panels this week was, I don't even remember what the guy's name is, but he has fucking tank treads instead of legs, and fucking guns for arms, and he, you know, he shoots Wolverine, old man Logan, and he rolls over him, and his response is to fucking cut through his tank tread legs and then fucking stab him in the chest. And then they're like, you know, they're all like, oh, because he got everybody to run to the quarry. The quarry is going to be the most defensible place, so everybody in town is running off there. And then they're like, wait a minute, what about the children? Because all the children, of course, are in, like, the church basement or whatever because they were at school. And so Wolverine rushes over to go help him. And there's another one of the Reavers is there, and it comes in the door, and it's getting ready to kill all the kids, spider-looking dude. And then Wolverine shows up, and he's like, oh, hang on a minute. Pulls him outside, and you get the little snick-snick noise. Mm-hmm. And then he leads the kids all out, and as they're going out, fucking dude's head is just laying on the ground, and Wolverine's like, oh, you guys probably shouldn't look at that. So it's Wolverine versus the Reavers, of which he's killed two. With not a lot of effort.
No, not really.
I mean,
I don't think that was the point of this book. The point of this book was chaos seems to follow Wolverine wherever he goes. And even though he's trying to calm down and live a normal life, the fact of the matter, he's never probably going to live that way. Because even when he tries to live in this quarry, you know, obviously some supervillains find a way. They even ask, it's like, how did you come back from death, blah, blah, blah. They're still not wise to the idea. But the fact of the matter is, Wolverine's always going to have these people following him.
Yeah, and he coming here to protect her is what put her in danger.
Exactly.
So he's worried something's going to happen to her no matter what, but he realized the fact that I'm here is why this happened, and this is going to be why he has to leave, even though he was happy there.
Like I said, a great book. Like I brought up earlier when we retired Book of the Week, this is another book that probably would have been contender for Book of the Week. Fantastic read. If you're not already reading this great book by Jeff Lemire, by all means, go out of your way to read it because I absolutely love this book. All right, let's move on to our next book, Silver Surfer, number 4, writer Dan Slott, art by Mike Allred.
Everybody on Earth loves Silver Surfer.
Yes. Yes, he lies dying after he uses his life force and the power cosmic to cleanse the Earth and all the other worlds of Zen Law culture. And he's not only freed the worlds, but he has erased Zen Law from time, space, history, and memory. So Shala Baal and her followers have been reduced to wearing blank white uniforms, flying blank white spaceships, and they attack the Earth in anger while the surfer is rushed to a hospital bed. So the Avengers and ordinary citizens, they fight against them. And Shala Baal, she tracks down the surfer in a hospital, and Alicia Masterson and Toomey do what they can to fight back. Don pleads for Shala Baal to stop, but it's the surfer himself who finally wakes up and stops her by submitting to his punishment. Which really, all it ended up being was they turned their backs on him, and they're like, yeah, you no longer have a home with Zen Law, so...
Yeah, so why did they have to fight their way in? And
I don't
why,
know.
I don't know. Why did they, you know, fight Alicia?
It was one of those things to where they thought they were doing them a favor by coming in and trying to make their world a better place. Because remember when they established earlier before that they came in and they fixed a lot of people's ailments?
No, we know that. Okay. I'm questioning why all the fighting. Why didn't they just tell him, no, we just want to tell him we're turning our backs on him.
Yeah, they didn't have to fight to say that.
Well, this is still a superhero book. You forget that, too.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, they could have done a better job of explaining. But the important thing about this is, you know, he loves Dawn. And she said she could be his home.
Well, and
then everyone was like, aw.
But it was also then from there when the people of Zen Law turned their back on Surfer. You had, obviously, they're all the superheroes there, but they happened to be in New York as well. And they dealt with the thing of, oh, there's all these senators and ambassadors from all around the world, and they all embrace Silver Surfer. They said, oh, if Zenlau won't have you, then we'll take you. So obviously you have obviously representatives from all around the world saying Silver Surfer's welcome there.
Yeah, he's been given citizenship by practically every country.
The funniest was when Sam Wilson's like, and you can also be a citizen of the U.S. of A. And then he's like, yeah, you don't really have the authority to do that, Sam. Which, another burial of Sam Wilson, because if fucking Steve Rogers would have told him that, it would have been like, oh, dude, you're a citizen.
Thanks, Cap.
You're not wrong. That's exactly what we're
having. Yeah, that was a joke. I know it was. Yeah, so the cover of the next issue is amazing. Because I don't know if you noticed this. It's a collection of Marvel staffers, writers, and artists and stuff mm-hmm. drawn onto the cover at a baseball game where Silver Surfer is sitting there with Dawn. Looking, you know, because he's going to be living on Earth now. It's not his home, but he loves Dawn. So he's going to hang out for a while and then realize, you know, I can't fucking stay on Earth.
Can't just silver down this. And just wear normal clothes like a regular person on Earth?
He might try. It's just, you know, for a cover element, it's more interesting to have him all silvered up.
This is true. Okay. From here, we're going to move on to our next book. Spider-Man number 4, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Sarah Pacelli.
Yankee's such a freaking mark.
Hey, we found out why he likes Gold Ball so much.
Because he's a fat freaking...
Because he's a fat superhero.
Yeah.
And Yankee's fat. And Yankee, his conversation with Miles is fucking hilarious, where he's trying to tell him, like...
He's like, it's easier to be skinny and black than to be fat and Asian.
Which is so awesome, because they were going to argue about it. Like, he's like, dude, are you trying to tell me, like, I don't know, something about discrimination or whatever? He's like, no, you don't, because you're skinny. He's like, you're black, I get that. He's like, and Hispanic. He's like, whatever. I'm fat and Asian.
Scott Snyder apparently doesn't much care for the fatties either.
Hey, he's got a point, dude, because, like, yeah, you could be a black guy and there's racism. But nobody likes fat people.
He's all, but the fact of the matter is, there's so many more fat people than there are African American people.
Well, you know.
They come in all, you know, colors, whereas, you know, African Americans tend to come as the one color.
Hey, if Miles was a fat black guy, he wouldn't have any argument. But then he probably wouldn't be Spider-Man.
Well, he'd be funny though. Cause he'd be fat and black.
He'd be Spider-Ham.
Ooh, nice.
Yankee, he ends up telling Gold Balls that Miles is Spider-Man.
So, well, you're an X-Men, you know, you guys are both super.
That was so fucked up.
Yeah, and freaking, he was so pissed. I'm like, I don't blame him, he should have smacked.
Even Gold Balls is like, you probably shouldn't have told me that.
He's like, you want to be our roommate? He's like, yeah.
He's like, okay, I'm cool with that.
God damn it, Bendis. Why are you fitting in your failed characters?
But he's going to be a regular on in this book because he's going to be
damn it.
So pissed Miles, he goes off web-slinging, and he's under attack by Black Cat's goons, mainly a Hammerhead, and he gets subdued. And that's kind of where it ends.
Yeah, because he shot fucking heat-seeking missiles at him.
Where's Hammerhead gets heat-seeking missiles from?
Oh.
Well, I imagine what's her name had the money for him, I guess.
Yeah, but still, isn't that a little severe just for Spider-Man?
Yeah, no.
It fucking worked.
Yeah, it did work.
Yeah, and then nobody ever caught him before.
True that. Okay.
Good plan.
Since we're talking all things Spider, let's move on to our next book, Spider-Woman, Issue 7, writer Dennis Hopeless, art by Javier Rodriguez. Did you read this, Alex?
What was it again? I'm eating.
You fool. Spider-Woman.
Mm. Did you read this?
Yeah, I read it.
Yeah, it was better, wasn't it?
It was better, but it wasn't on par with what we've read in Spider-Woman so far, so...
I disagree. Because what they did here was they kept up the Spider-Woman storyline, which I hate, and it's finishing in the next issue of, you know, Spider-Women Omega, and I'm not going to read it. But they kept it to, like, a minimum. They took a point of that story, and they worked it into her normal story.
Which is nice.
Which is good, because that story of her on the other Earth is shit, and I don't care about it, and I don't care about Spider-Gwen, and I really don't care about Silk. But, you know, Spider-Woman I like, and I like her kid, and I like Porcupine. So what happened was, alternate reality, her, which is a guy, who's evil, kind of, he stole Spider-Gwen's transporter, so he was in her apartment. He didn't really do anything bad. He, you know, he painted Spider Baby's nursery. Like, he didn't do anything bad, and he hung out with Porcupine. I mean, it was meant to be threatening, but he wasn't really doing anything threatening. And they had a fight, and then they busted through the kid's room, and then she's like, all right, we have to stop fighting. And he's like, okay. So they stopped fighting, and they talk. And then Spider-Gwen showed up to fight him. And she's like, no, no, we already talked it out. It's all right. And she's like, no, it's not. He fucking stole my thing. I want it back. And also, his boss wants to take over the world. And she's like, what? You didn't tell me that. You said you were like, it was like corporate espionage. And you were, you know, he traveled from dimension to dimension stealing technology that they didn't have on his world. And that's what he did. Which, you know, she's like, well, that's not really good, but... you know, it's not the worst thing ever. And then Spider-Gwen revealed, no, he's doing this for his boss, and she's going to use the technology to take over the world. Mm-hmm. So that's no good. But that storyline is going to finish up in Spider-Women Omega, which I don't need to read. And then we're back to the normal storyline in this, which I like much more. But this issue kept the Spider-Women storyline to a minimum.
Yeah, I'm seeing your stuff with Cindy Moon and Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, I don't ever want to see them again. And, you know, in all honesty, she doesn't really have a rogues gallery. So, you know, male clone version of her is not the most compelling villain, but it is something.
Yeah. Like,
you know, let's build up some villains for her.
I don't even think you necessarily need villains. It's just tell really good stories with the kid.
No, you can't just have a book about her taking care of the kid. It's a superhero book. You gotta have some superhero shit going on.
Yeah, well, we've seen issues before where she's just trying to juggle being a superhero and then being a new mom, so a new single mom, yeah. Especially.
And give her a villain, and give her a villain who doesn't want to murder the kid.
Yeah, because that'd be so easy to go to, right?
Yeah, and I like that they're avoiding that with this guy. Like, he doesn't want to kill her fucking kid. He's not outright evil. He's working for someone who's evil.
It would be funny if the villain who she happens to fight is also a newly single parent.
And then they end up dating.
Just give us a book, Marvel. Come on, we could do some good.
By the way, side story. Unrelated to comics. Jack got invited to a birthday party.
Well, someone related to your kid.
Yeah. So me and Lauren take him, and it was at the local Y, but they have this big, giant, semi-outdoors play area with fucking trampolines and the big slides and ballroom, and the kids can climb around and all that shit. So we show up, and the kid's mom's there, and she's like, okay, well, you guys can hang out if you want, or you could just come back at 3. And it was like 2 hours. Jack is 5. We are not prepared to have the option to leave him here. And I go up to Jack and I'm like, hey, Jack, buddy, would you mind if me and mom left and just came back to pick you up? Well, Jack's there with all his school friends and he's got all his shit to climb around and he's like, yeah, dad, I'm cool. And he runs off. And me and Lauren stand there for a minute and we're like, we could have 2 hours without our kid, and he'll be watched by other people. Should we leave? And this is so foreign to us that Lauren's like, well, maybe we should stick around for a little bit, but I guess we should probably leave. So we stuck around for a little bit, realized he was fine, and then we're like, okay, I guess we can go. And we walked out the door of the Y, and we had no idea what to do. Like, we were completely lost as to what... Like, We've been given the option now to leave our kids somewhere and have somebody else watch him. And we realized we have no fucking idea what to do in this situation. So we went to the place next door and we got a couple beers. It was all we could think to do.
Was it like that one issue, sort of bring it back to comic, was it like that last, not the last issue, but the issue before Spider-Woman where all she's thinking about is the kid?
No, because we knew he was all right, but, you know, it's just weird to not have him around. When he goes to fucking kindergarten and he's at school all day, it won't matter to me because I'll be at work, but I have no idea what the fuck Lauren's going to do when she doesn't have to watch Jack for 5 days out of the week. Oh, it's going to be so weird.
But I'm sure it'll be easy with her not having to deal with Jack morning, noon, and night.
Well, no, it'll be easier for her, but it'll just be very different from what we've come accustomed to.
Yeah, if you're listening to this for the first time, Jack is the voice of the child at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, that's when he was like 3.
Yeah.
I think he was 3 when we recorded that. Yeah,
interesting fact, we've been doing this show for about 3 years now.
Yeah.
We hit our 3-year mark, I think a week or two ago.
Congratulations, us.
Yes. Dave, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was thinking maybe he was 4 years old in that thing. I wasn't really sure.
Well, we didn't have him from the start, so he was either 3 or 4. He's a much better talker now. Eventually, we got to get him on to do a review because he can read now.
Ooh, nice. Remember I sort of pitched the idea of him doing like a kid book, like Rocket Raccoon?
Yeah, and then I was going to have him review Bone because somebody from the show sent it to him, and he loved Bone. Mm-hmm. He's up to like volume 4, and I should actually order the next two volumes.
Who sent you Bone?
Huh?
Who sent you Bone?
Slomka? Jacoby.
Ooh, nice.
No, it's Slomko.
No, it is Slomko. Yeah, he used to, yeah. Okay. So Slomko sent it. And I thanked him on Facebook and all that, and I think I thanked him on the show, but I since went and bought the next two volumes because Jack liked it so much. But, when I started reading it, Jack couldn't read as well, but now, you know, he fucking can read anything and does. Which, by the way, that's caused separate problems I won't get into because this isn't Jack Conversations, but he can read anything now, so I really got to get him on the show to review something.
Nice. All right. Let's move on to our next book, Squadron Supreme, number 7, writer James Robinson, art by Leonard Clark.
Art sucked.
Yeah, it wasn't all that great.
So I thought I'd just say that. Story was fine, but the art sucked. It's although I will point out, the Dr. Spectrum story, which should be more interesting, I quickly grew tired of. The Nighthawk storyline of him fighting Nighthawk, I really liked that part. I thought that was good. Yeah, and I liked the part of Hyperion being a trucker, hitting on a chick.
Well, and I like it that they sort of made light of Hyperion being a trucker, because I know that book isn't everybody's cup of tea, and people kind of laugh at the idea of Hyperion being a trucker. They sort of address that in this issue.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, and Hyperion's off discovering America, whatever the fuck that means. And then they cut to Hyperion, apparently discovering America means going into a diner and hitting on the single mother waitress.
Well, you know, Hyperion, which is speaking of rats.
You know, Dr. Spectrum's down there dealing with the alien invasion with Black Bolt, and Nighthawk is fighting,
Nighthawk.
You know, Nighthawk, and Hyperion is hitting on waitresses and diners. And he's the most powerful one. Why the fuck is he doing this? Asshole. That's probably why they're mad at him. Like, oh, we got Superman on our team, but he's busy. Fucking waitresses. Trying to discover America.
Quick question about Nighthawk. When did he appear in the 616?
I was unaware he had, but apparently he was a member of the Defenders.
Yeah, in fact, a buddy of mine bought the original 2007 Civil War, and he's in that as well. So how long has he been in 616?
Well, if he was in the Defenders, that would have been either the 80s or the 90s.
So he's been there for a while, but he was also on Squadron Supreme, which I remember, he wasn't in, isn't that another dimension?
Yeah, it wasn't on the 616. It was in another world. So, I don't know, he must have been folded in at some point, and I was just unaware of it. He was never a big deal character, so they made fun of his costume. Well, the current Nighthawk made fun of his ridiculous costume, as he called it, and Fair enough, it is. But they're fighting, so that's good. I like that. I want to read the Nighthawk book.
Yeah, that's going to be
pretty
great.
Pretty much what I got out of this. I like Nighthawk. He's cool.
But then the third portion of the story was the Dr. Spectrum stuff. She obviously was confronted with Black Bolt and was it Toro? Yeah, that's the name of the other
Hebrew. Yeah, Toro. Right? She kept calling him Toto.
Well, she at first she didn't know his name, and then when they started throwing down, she just dismissively called her Toto.
Yeah, she kept calling him Toto. And, I mean, they so just dicked around. He's like, Narmer's my friend. You killed him? And she's like, don't you watch the fucking news? And he's like, well, no, I'm working for S.H.I.E.L.D. I've been busy. So he finds out she killed Narmer, and he gets all pissed off, and they have to have another fight until Black Bolt breaks it up. Because, you know, you can't fuck with Black Bolt. And, but the weird thing was, it's like, they so just kind of wrote over where he's like, yeah, I'm older than I look, and I fought with him back in World War II, but now I'm an Inhuman, and it's like, what? So, what? Your fucking fire powers were separate from you being an Inhuman, but you were always an Inhuman and you just didn't know.
Dave,
very quickly glossed over that.
Dave, are you up on your Toro knowledge or no?
No.
Okay, I was just curious.
Okay. Yeah, because I don't know how that. I mean, it was to establish, you know, she's.
Wait, go back again. I wasn't even listening to half the shit you were saying.
So in this issue.
Uh huh.
He kind of said, like, yeah, I'm older than I look, and, you know, I was fighting with the Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch, back in World War II, and I was friends with Narmer, but now I'm an Inhuman, and now I work for Medusa, and there was no explanation of in between, like, why have you been alive so long? Did you know you were an Inhuman back then?
Yeah, that was explained in the Invaders book.
Oh, okay.
But I'm saying,
yeah, that was all explained, because that was remember in that book they found out he was an Inhuman and not a mutant and not a whatever the hell else he was.
And didn't Robinson write that book?
Yes.
Okay, so he's doing that bullshit Rick Remender thing where he's just assuming that I read his other book. I hate that. Don't do that. Don't assume. Because I don't understand what he is, and it's because you didn't explain it well enough.
Yeah, he's
except to say that he's an Inhuman.
Yeah, he's an Inhuman. And they explain why he's not older. There was some explanation. It's been explained before, but I can't remember exactly what it was.
Well, he kind of hand-waved it, which is, you know, that's fine.
Does
I don't care, because that was the least interesting part of the story. I'm more interested in Hyperion hitting on diner waitresses and Nighthawk fighting shitty Nighthawk than I am in Dr. Spectrum, which, you know, like I said, From an emotional standpoint, that should be the strongest story.
But
it came off as the weakest.
Yeah, and initially it was the stronger of all the stories, because there was that thing where she hated Black Bolt because he was part of the Illuminati who blew up her home world, but at the same time, because of Black Bolt, she was still alive. So it's one of those things where she was conflicted.
Yeah.
But because they set up all these other storylines which are significantly more interesting, it's one of those things to where it's like, well, you set up this great premise, but now we don't care. Okay, from there we're going to move on to our final Marvel book, Uncanny Avengers 9, writer Jerry Duggan, art by Ryan Stegman.
You get a bombshell in this issue. Got the return of Hank Pym.
Awesome.
It wasn't really a bombshell, though, because he returned in a previous issue.
No, he didn't return. He was shown, but he didn't return to Earth.
We found out what happened to him, and I also found out he died in a graphic novel I didn't read.
A graphic novel we weren't entirely sure was canon or not until we read that.
No, I was 100% sure it was canon because Marvel went on Twitter and said it was 100% canon.
Oh,
but then
okay.
my question is, when did he? Because I think the last time they left off was in the Hickman run. He was Yellow Jacket, but then in that story he was for whatever reason why Giant Man again. So that's my question. Yeah, well, yeah, Secret Wars, why not? But
he merged with Ultron and keeps telling everyone he's got that shit on lockdown.
Yeah, but nobody believes it.
Yeah, nobody believes him at all. Because Hank Pym's, he's a wife beater. You can't trust him. I don't know why they went to Wasp. Like, what the fuck is she going to tell him?
I don't know. And
I don't know. He hit me. fucker.
He's got a daughter running around now.
Yeah. He doesn't know about that.
Yeah, they didn't address that.
Yeah, but I mean, I wonder how that's going to play into all this.
It might.
He's, they're like, I like how they tell him to take off the suit, but he's like, I can't because I'm only half a man.
Oh, yeah.
That was a cool piece of art, actually. He, like, opens it up and you see that he's basically an upper torso and a head.
Yes.
And the rest of it is all Ultron.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sucks for him.
He's going to die if he
And they told him, like, yeah, we had a funeral service for you, a memorial and everything. He's like, you fucking guys didn't even come look for me. Like, you didn't even know I was dead. You did this. So he destroys the memorial.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm alive. I don't need it anymore.
Yeah, he just blows it up, which, again, makes them go like,
And then at my favorite part is when they start questioning him. He's like, you put Deadpool on the team. And then Deadpool responds very quickly. He's like, I'm not really Deadpool. I'm Ronin in disguise.
Yeah, that was good. I'm Ronin, the secret ninja in a Deadpool costume. Good line, Deadpool. Good line.
This is the book I was telling you guys at the beginning of the show where, you know, it wasn't all that great from the first arc, and I was on the fence whether I was going to keep reading this book. I'm so glad I stuck with it and you guys had me reading this book.
Well, because we told you, it's been getting better.
Yeah. I can genuinely say that this is my problem, my favorite Avengers book. It's better than the Wade stuff for sure.
And I disagree with that. You didn't like the last issue of the Wade stuff, but you liked it before
I,
that.
I even liked
You turn on books really quickly, and then you decide you like them very quickly. It's weird.
He's
how
like,
you
what
do
have
that.
You, what have you he's done? He's the Chris Regal of comic reviewers.
What have you done for me lately is my approach to reading comic books.
Yeah.
If you write a bad issue, depending who you are, it's very hard. It's very easy for me to just turn on a dime.
No stick-to-itiveness.
No. Right, from there
no dedication.
Yes. From there, we're going to move on to our final publisher, Valiant, and our next issue, Rye, issue 13. See if I can very quickly pull it up. Writer Matt Kent, art by our favorite artist, Safu Kafu.
This is the origin of the original Rye and how yes. New Japan was kind of shitty, but as Father took more control, he made it better?
Sort of. They kind of gave an explanation. It's like, yeah, we were trying to make it better, but there's always that small percentage of people that are never happy no matter what.
And that was the Raddies who existed from issue one, which Marvel understands now because he's read it. So yes. We actually got the origin of one of the factions. We got the origin of the Rise.
And the Positrons.
And Father, you know, getting more control-y as it was. I just assumed Father was kind of evil from the start, but he really wasn't. He was just less effective at the start. Although the saddest part of this issue was the first Rye he made, it was a kid. Like, it.
Yeah.
He was a kid who came upon Father, and Father's like, hey, I need someone to do some shit for me to make stuff better. And he's like, okay. And he turned him into the first Rye. But he wasn't like the Rye we have. Like, he didn't have a sword and shit. He had, like, fucking. His arms turned into cannons that, like, shot out water and stuff. Like, he grew plants. That's what he did. And.
He wasn't a fighter.
Yeah, and the original Raddies, like, they're like, they're killing all the Positrons, like the early Positrons they made. They're killing all them. And then, you know, Rye's there, little Rye, to show up. And he's like, hey, guys, come on, we got to stop fighting. And then he hears, help, help. And he goes down into the sewers, and all the, like, the head Raddies are there. And they're like, okay, we're going to fucking kill him now, but we got to wait for him to weaponize first. And he's like, no, guys, I don't do that. And he, like, changes his hands so they look kind of like cannons, and they just start fucking beating the shit out of little Rye. Like, they're fucking curb stomping him, and they're hitting him with pipes and shit. And then they realize, oh wait, he's still talking, and he's like, no, I'm just here to build. I can grow. He's like, take me to Father. He can fix me. It'll be okay. We can fix all this. And they're like, okay, we gotta fucking dump this kid out the airlock here. To get rid of the evidence, because they realized they killed him and he had no fucking weapons. He wasn't going to fight them. He was just trying to talk to him.
And even as
they killed him anyway.
Okay, it's okay, Father can fix me. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it was a weird way to do this because, I mean, the Raddies in the original run, like, they were kind of crazy, the way they just had to kill all the fucking robots. And, you know, we knew some of the positrons, they weren't bad. Like, some of them were somewhat capable of free thought if, like, their owners had died. Like, they weren't bad. So the fact that they were just murdering all of them was kind of fucked up. But here, they straight up murdered a kid who meant absolutely no harm to them. But they fucking killed him. They dumped him out of an airlock, and that might explain why Father got a little more hardcore against these things. Because, you know, they're bad people. They're just not good people. It was fucked up. Don't kill kids.
Even if it's a robot, don't kill.
And he's not even really a robot, because he was right. A real kid.
He was a kid at one point, and Father made him into a robot. I forgot about that. Yeah, just now.
Like, they don't know that, but that's the way it is. All the Rise have moms.
Yeah.
That's what we found out in Rise. So when they killed him, they killed a human kid. That's fucked up.
I think the end game here is, I don't think they killed him.
What, you think little kid Rai is still alive on shitty Earth?
Yes.
If he is, he'd probably be pretty pissed off.
Yes, and that's when I think he's going to run into the current Rai on Earth.
Did you read spoiler? Well,
no, that's me speculating. I could be wrong.
Well, he has a point, because why do you do this story if not to reintroduce this character? But the thing is, Rai's already up fighting Father. Father's going to turn New Japan into a dragon. He's going to fight Rai in the Exo Man O War Mecha.
That's still funny, you saying that, him turning New Japan into a dragon.
It's going to be so fucking awesome. I can't wait to see that book.
Well, I think it was in the last episode that we did, you sort of laughed how ridiculously over the top that was. Like, that's the solution to save New Japan. The reason why he's having all these problems, because, you know, this wouldn't happen if New Japan was a giant dragon.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you've got this story, which is kind of depressing and, like, not a happy story. And then in the main book, you've got fucking robot Exo Manowar being controlled by Rai fighting New Japan Dragon. Like, it's weird how they're doing this. Like, these two stories, they go together? Because, you know, plot-wise, it all makes sense. But, you know, just the tones of the stories are very different. Like, the 4001 issue 1 was a serious story, but it was kind of fucking goofy because of the giant robots and the transforming New Japan. And then this is about a kid getting fucking murdered by a bunch of people because they don't like robots and they think he's a robot. It's a very different story to tell.
Yeah, like I said, this may not come to fruition, my idea, but maybe this is their example of world building. We can see how the Raddies are.
I think it's a good guess. Yeah, and you gotta villainize the Raddies, which I don't know, cause you can't really defend Father. He has been just straight up genociding New Japan to keep himself alive. So, you know, you can't really make him a good guy. But the thing is, I've been watching Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones is currently trying to make you feel bad for a absolutely horrible character who I hate. And they've done it in the past. And this is a popular trope in just any form of media now, is to take the previous villain and make them sympathetic, which is fine. I mean, comics have always done that. They did it with, they kind of did it with Dr. Doom over the years, where they give him a reason for being the way he is, so you kind of feel bad for him. But, you know, Father is an evil fucking robot. He's just straight up evil.
Yeah.
Don't try to make me feel bad for him or try to understand him. Because I've seen what he did in the last issue. There's no justification for that.
No, and he's a robot. You can get away with doing stuff like that.
Well, he's not a robot. He's a very advanced AI.
This is true.
Although he does have a semi-robot body now.
Well, yeah, and even like the way they established Father in the beginning of this issue. He's like, the artificial intelligence is kind of a fallacy. It's either intelligence or it isn't.
Yeah, because Father was the narrator of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good issue.
Yes, very much so. All right, let's move on to our next book. Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, issue 7. Writer Robert Venditti, art by Raul Allen.
They explained it.
Yes. In this issue, he's in that mysterious lab of sorts under the watchful eye of a man known as Sovereign. And he appears to be every bit as old as the Eternal Warrior from, you know, what we found out that, you know, he's lived different lives. Although there's a difference between him and the Eternal Warrior. His quest is to know why Gilead can return from death in the same body while he himself must start back over in a different one.
So he has captured him and put him in this labyrinth so he could kill him, shoot little nanobots into him, and then hopefully learn how he comes back to life.
Yes, and not just that, and how he comes back to life in the same body.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, Eternal Warrior, he's defeated in the labyrinth, bloody and torn open, and left for the tiny machinations of Sovereign to now study.
Yep.
Yep.
They did show his funeral, though.
Yes.
And, you know, they pointed out your older brother, which is,
he's got two
Ivar.
Ivar.
Well, Ivar is his older brother. He was pissed off, but, Armstrong was, he was sad. He was crying. They said the big one. Which should be him. He was very sad. Archer wasn't at the funeral, by the way. It's not really worth mentioning. Ninjak was there in the fucking Ninjak costume.
Yeah. Who?
Ninja K showed up to the funeral, all decked out. No, when he wears the costume, he's Ninjak. But when he's just running around, when he's Colin or whatever his name is, he's Ninja K.
You're just saying that because he wears the shirt.
He used to wear a mask.
All the time?
Like, even when he doesn't have his whole suit, he used to wear a mask. Well, yes, because ninjas are cool because of the mask.
Should it be like a luchador where even when it wears a suit, he still has the mask?
No, because ninjas don't wear a tight mask. It's not a lucha mask.
Should be like Moon Knight?
No, because I don't want him to have a tight mask. I want the loose mask. Just tie it over your mouth. Cover your mouth. Everybody looks cooler when their mouth is covered. It's a fact.
All right.
Fact.
Let's move on to our final book. Exo Manowar Annual 2016. Obviously, number one, writer Robert Venditti, art by Safu.
I didn't read it because it was fucking 64 pages long.
It read
really fast.
Quickly. It read quickly, yeah. Very quickly, fast. Actually. The first story was a one-page story, just a quick recap of his origin. The second story was kind of like an in-depth look at his early days of his family. You know, they were travelers. They were nomadic people, and kind of shows him, you know, him growing up, and I guess his one day they were attacked. I guess it was his dad, or I don't know if it was dad or somebody. You know, like. Their group was attacked and a lot of people were killed. And there's another issue where, or another story. It's Colonel Capshaw from the Shield people. They don't call them Shield, but they something else. They're called Gate. Yeah, that's what it is. They kind of planted seeds for something that may happen with her later on. About her questioning who she really is. Apparently, her dad was probably some Russian dude who. I don't know, it was a spy or something, and for some reason, she doesn't remember this, she just thinks she's from Grand Rapids or something. And then, the other issue is one called The Meeting, and it's with Commander Trill, and he tries to, he has a meeting with, like, the plantlings, and he's such an asshole to them.
but then, the plantlings win him over, they're like, they tell him that they have very similar objectives. And very quickly he's like, okay, whatever, I'll team up with you guys.
Yeah, he's kind of forcing himself to be more open to use the plantlings. But he really hates them. He's like, you and your Hollywood and, you know, all these things, why don't you just be human all of a sudden and you love all this stuff?
That was very funny, but they realized they had the same goal. So even though at the beginning he was throwing his weight around, looking his nose down on him, it's like, we have the same objective, so whatever, let's just team together.
And also we got some, they kind of explained a little stuff about the Vine. Cause you know, like they mentioned how about the Vine homeworld was destroyed and they've been gone without a home. They mentioned something called the Torment, and they kind of gave some specifics about it. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
no, it was good. It was good annual. It was real quickly.
There was no in the Valiant writers' room in this one.
Sadly, no.
Like in the Bloodshot.
That was amazing. But it's funny that they chose to make this annual because it read like just a normal issue, but it did jump around. It did have different writer or different artists. And it, like I said, it told a bunch of different stories, but at the same time, you kind of need to read this issue as well because it sort of kept on what's going on in the book, currently. So it's one of these things where if, you know what, if we hadn't jumped on the book at this point, this would have been a great jumping on point.
Oh yeah, it was really good because it gave you a lot of background and...
I think that's why they made it, because it very much read like, okay, if you haven't read Exo Manowar up until this point, this is probably the best place to do it.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of how it read.
Which is good. More people reading Exo Manowar is always good times.
Cool.
All right, that's going to wrap up this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment, next week's books.
Wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes, or how my heart breaks, I will be right here waiting for you.
Hey, Alex, you're usually at the helm with this, so yep. What do we got for next week?
Yep. Art Ops number 8. Let me check something real quick.
By all means.
Mike Allred, not the artist.
Boo!
Oh, wait. No, he is. He is. I'm sorry. Allred is back.
Awesome.
Yay! And the most important book of the week, DC Rebirth number 1. I want to read something to you from the solicitation. First of all, this is their biggest book. It's only $2.99.
Wow.
Well,
that's a big deal.
They want this as many hands as they can, so they want to charge as much as possible.
Let me read this to you, because this is fascinating to me. It all begins here. Do not skip to the last page. Do not let a friend or message board ruin this comic for you. Wait, it gets funnier. The future and past of the DC universe starts here. Don't say we didn't warn you. They said it. Quote, Rebirth is about focusing in on the core of the character and their respective universes, says writer and DC Entertainment Chief Creative Officer Jeff Johns. Here's the most fascinating thing. Listen to this. DC put this in the fucking solicitation. It brings back what has been lost. Ooh. The legacy of the characters, the love and the hope of the DCU. In their solicitation, they pointed out that the New 52 was a fucking miserable mess. I cannot believe they did that.
They buried their own stuff.
He buried their own stuff. He's their fucking creative guy. Like, he's the top fucking guy, and he buried it. That's hilarious. Oh, I had to read
but
that.
At the same time, I
cannot wait to read that, in all honesty.
At the same time, it isn't boast confidence, because it's the same guy still.
Well, but if he's going a different direction. I've read a lot of his stuff, and he's not always, you know, depressing. Superman 52 is the end of that storyline.
Okay.
Hopefully Superman dies. I just say that after saying, oh, look, they're going to be happier now. Well, to be happier, you got to kill that miserable fuck.
Well, and yeah, as long as you're acknowledging failures, let's kill New 52 Superman. Let's bring Grillo back.
The real Superman.
Hey, that's what he is.
Okay.
And he better wear the underwear on the outside. Here.
Monstrous number 6. Starve number 9.
Ooh.
Tokyo Ghost number 7. Ooh. Hey, I remembered a book I didn't read.
Nice.
What's up? Getting better. Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 1.
Yay!
I knew of all people Dave was going to be the one that flipped out about that.
He's back. Daredevil number 7.
Oh, God. That's a book when we start reading DC stuff, that's the one that's going to go to the wayside.
Well, I'm not reading it, but I'm putting it on for you guys. Doctor Strange, number 8. Extraordinary X-Men, number 10. Hyperion, number 3.
Which, by the way, for all the people at the F4W board that hate that book, what's up?
Hey, we thought the last issue was better.
No, actually, I like the first issue better with the carnies.
Really? Oh, bees. My God.
the clown made out of bees.
Mighty Thor number 7.
Ooh, nice.
Feels like forever since that book came out. Yeah.
Miss Marvel number 7, which is on the road to Civil War.
Yeah.
Nighthawk number 1.
That'll probably be great. Who's if you could pull up who's
David Walker, who I'm not hugely familiar with, although I have read stuff he's written before and can't remember what any of it is.
Some buzzword.
That doesn't mean it's bad. Yeah, do we read Star Wars anymore?
We read it, but we don't review it.
Okay. Starbrand and Nightmask, number 6. This is the last issue.
Aww.
No, it's not. Totally, we don't read that anymore.
No.
Uncanny Inhumans, number 9.
Are we still reading that?
Yes.
That we all read. I'm thinking of the other one.
Oh, okay.
Bloodshot Reborn, number 16.
Yeah!
I believe you guys dropped Divinity.
It's no, the same I thing. Didn't. Well, yeah, let's put it on the list anyway.
Seems like a light week, isn't it?
And Imperium number 16.
You say that, and then I'm going to do the count, and it's going to probably still be 20 again.
How many of them do you read?
This is true. Let's see how many books we got. Totaling 19.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to read everything, so it'll probably be like 15 for me.
Yeah, I'm not reading 19, so I'm good. Okay. You guys can add whatever you want.
Okay. Yeah, for most of us, it'll probably come around between 16 and 17 books.
Hey! I have a question. You remember that book we read? It was Mark Waid, and I can't remember who did the art, but it had really good art about the black alien who...
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, what the fuck was that book, and why hasn't it been published?
Strange Fruit.
Yeah, why is that? That hasn't come out, right?
We
got a second issue, I think.
We got the dirt issue, I think.
Let's very quickly look this up while we're wrapping up this show.
Well, that was a good book.
We read issues 1 and 2. Let's see when it was supposed to come out. Came out a while ago, apparently. August 15th, I think, of last year. No. Okay, no, I got this wrong. I got this completely wrong. You're right to bring it up when you did. It's not going to – well, it says in shops April 27th, 2016. Sorry.
It had a controversy, apparently.
Oh?
Let's see.
There we go.
In the next issue, he'll be white.
Yeah, I'm looking at the comic book resource story. Is that the one you pulled up or quick? It said Wade responds to Strange Fruit controversy.
I think so.
What's the controversy? His name is Johnson?
Well, you know, obviously that they're dealing stuff with the South and African Americans and...
Yeah, but it's in the past. There was racism in the past.
Among the criticisms include the final page of the first issue depicting the black and superhuman alien at the focal point. The one with the Confederate flag? Remember when he was draped in the... Yeah, that was the second issue. Oh, okay. I thought it was...
That was a controversy? That was the whole point.
Wayne responded to that story point specifically writing, he's kind of in a sense, or is he kind of wiping his butt with it? That's more of that. He's not adopting it as a superhero costume, no. It is in point of fact a middle finger to the white guys who are carrying the Klan guys who are carrying that flag.
Yeah.
So skepticism surrounding Straight Fruit, the way behind the title itself, and the questions on the ability of Jones and Wade to credibly tell such a story since the series was first announced early this year.
Let's see when if and when issue 4 actually came out.
Or 3, you mean?
Well, no, I just told you issue 3 came out in April 27th.
Really? I don't even remember that. So we missed that book like 2 weeks ago?
We must have just missed it, yeah.
Or a month ago or something?
We're going to have to remember when the next issue comes out. Actually, this very quickly before we wrap this show up to see if it actually comes out next week. Let's try to remember when it comes out. Let's play a little bit of catch up and read the last issue as well. Let's see if it came out this week. I don't even remember who published that.
It was Boom.
Let's see. Strange. I had Dr. Strange. Nope. It doesn't come out next week, so... That's one of those things where I guess when we start doing next week's book, let's try to keep an eye out for that.
Was it going to be a 4-issue miniseries, or how many issues?
I don't remember, but it was supposed to be a limited series.
Okay.
All right. With that all the way, that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Bye.